We knew we only had to add Br'er Rabbit, Br'er Bear, and Br'er Fox to make it work. So we added 10 new figures to the 75 existing figures from America Sings. We had a show of 85 figures for the cost of 10. So we did it, and Splash Mountain was one of the first projects that Michael Eisner approved, and it opened in 1989. It took a while to build, because it is a fairly complicated show. A little background on the background. Tony was referencing America Sings at Disneyland. This attraction was at Disneyland's Tomorrowland from June 1974 to April 1988. The show used a revolving theater format, similar to the Carousel of Progress. Instead of watching a family evolve over the years, you watched and listened as characters performed a 24-minute musical medley of patriotic American music. As Tony said, before this attraction closed, they salvaged many of the audio animatronics to use at Disneyland's version of Splash Mountain. What we find in Walt Disney World are obviously reproductions of Disneyland's version of the ride. It's an interesting story about how the attraction came to be, but it doesn't really explain why an attraction based on the Old South is featured in Frontierland, which is based on the Old West. But hey, this is Disney after all. It's all just fantasy, right? Not everything has to be logical. Despite, or because of, the probability of getting wet, the ride is great. It lasts about 11 minutes, and as you progress through the attraction and see the story unfold before you, you'll notice each drop during the attraction increases with severity until you take the really big plunge. As you crest the top of the final plunge, if your eyes are open, take a look around. For a split second, it gives a great view of the park. But don't forget to smile, as plunging down a mountain makes for a great photo opportunity. Adventureland. Welcome to Adventureland, home to pillaging pirates, talking birds, an exotic river cruise, and a tasty treat known as Dole Whip. But it be too late to alter course, mateys, and there be plunderin' pirates lurkin' in every cove. They pillage, plunder, rifle, and loot, so let's go pay our respects to Captain Jack Sparrow, as dead men tell no tales. Pirates of the Caribbean is located in the Caribbean Plaza section of Adventureland. The area features Spanish and English architectural styles based on the West Indies of the 18th century. The attraction's origins date back to Disneyland in 1967. The Disneyland attraction was originally conceived by Walt Disney as a wax museum and walk-through exhibit, but it changed to a boat ride as technology within the company advanced. Believe it or not, Pirates of the Caribbean almost didn't come to fruition at Walt Disney World. In a 2009 news release by Disney in their Walt Disney World newsletter, the company explains, Pirates of the Caribbean wasn't included in the original plans for Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World Resort. The Disney Imagineers thought that since Florida sits in the middle of the real Caribbean, there would be little interest in a pirates-themed adventure. Soon after opening in the fall of 1971, Walt Disney World Resort was inundated with guest comments expressing disappointment that the renowned Disneyland attraction was nowhere to be found in Magic Kingdom. By fall of 1972, Pirates of the Caribbean was under construction in Florida. Pirates of the Caribbean opened in Florida's Magic Kingdom on December 15, 1973. It was one of the first major additions to the park following its grand opening in 1971. Wow, it's hard to think of a Magic Kingdom experience without a trip aboard Pirates of the Caribbean. It's one of the most beloved attractions at any theme park around the world, and was even the catalyst for the highly successful film franchise of the same name. The 9-minute gentle boat ride aboard a flat-bottom boat uses 155,000 gallons of water. There is one 14-foot plunge in the dark to take visitors through a seaport of swashbuckling scoundrels who sing and besiege a port in the Caribbean. There are 125 audio animatronic figures, 65 pirates and villagers, and 60 animals and birds. Here are a few highlights and secrets to observe. As you enter Castillo del Moro, the Spanish fortress housing the attraction, there's lots to check out as you work your way through the queue. It appears as though the castle is under attack. Check out the walls. There's damage from cannonballs, and in a few spots, you'll notice a few still lodged in the wall. If you can spot a jail cell window with bars in the fast-pass line, take a peek in. You'll find two intellectual skeletons in a chess battle. This little detail was originally set to have them deadlocked, pun intended, as the game board shows a tie between the players, which Imagineers created with accuracy. However, from time to time, the chess pieces have been skewed inadvertently, and they don't always make their way back to the proper position of being at a stalemate. Once you board your boat, get ready to experience the full legend and lore of pirates, visiting the Pirate's Grotto, the fort, the town square, the burning city, and of course, the dungeon. There's so much to see and appreciate from all angles here, in addition to trying to spot some hidden magic. As the ride is coming to an end, and you sail up to the scene with Captain Jack, glance at the lock on the cell. It looks a lot like a hidden Mickey. Oh, and a little spoiler alert. Don't be too alarmed about the fire effect throughout the attraction. The illusion is a combination of cloth, fans, and lights, but when you're just glancing at it, there is a very realistic effect to it. Pirates of the Caribbean is a very popular and high-capacity ride, moving guests through quite efficiently. The queue is pretty long, and it can be hard to tell how long the wait really is. If you can, fast pass this, as it's a must-see attraction. In keeping with the water-based adventure attractions, hang a right out of the Castillo del Moro and walk to the Jungle Cruise, another legendary Disney attraction with its origins at Disneyland. The catalyst for this attraction was Disney's award-winning True Life Adventure films. Walt originally hoped to feature live animals on this ride, but quickly realized that wouldn't be the best idea because of the high unpredictability of animals. The film The African Queen, starring Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn, helped influence aspects of this attraction as well. When the attraction debuted at Disneyland in 1955, there was a more serious, educational tone to it. However, by the early 1960s, the storyline evolved and became a bit more lighthearted and humorous, as guests encounter hippos, elephants, and maybe even a headhunter or two during their boat tour of the rivers across Asia, Africa, and South America. As you enter the queue, listen to the music and banter over the public address system for the ride. There are a few cheesy announcements and songs being played overhead. At any point during your trip on the Jungle Cruise, take a look down at the river. You won't find a hidden Mickey in the murky water, but the water does have some secrets to tell. Throughout the park, where there's outdoor water, such as the Jungle Cruise, the water is dyed to give the illusion that the water is deeper than it actually is, and to not reveal components of the ride. Tom Morris elaborated on the topic for me. The water is circulated throughout the park to other bodies of water of varying depths, so it's mostly to camouflage the bottom and any apparatus there may be, like tracks and pipes, etc., but it's also to create a more natural look. Because water chemistry is different in each geographical location around the world, the recipe is different at each resort, and it usually takes a year to fine-tune it. Who knew? Disney even finagles the water. Leaving the Jungle Cruise, let's head out across the walkway to Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room. I've been throwing around the term audio animatronic or animatronic quite freely throughout the book and haven't defined or fully described it. More than likely, you're familiar with the term, which describes the electronic actors at Walt Disney World who never flub their lines, don't need a coffee break, and never ask for a pay raise. Since we're about to check out the Enchanted Tiki Room, the attraction where animatronics debuted at Disneyland in 1963, now would be a good time for a little storytelling and scratch just below the surface of these mechanical creations. The official Disney fan club, D23, published a great article about the origins of these characters, the birds, beasts, and beauty of Disney's audio animatronic characters. Here are a few lines from the story. When Walt Disney found an antique mechanical singing bird in a shop while on vacation in New Orleans, he was intrigued. He reasoned that he and his staff had been doing animation on film for years, but it would be fun to try some three-dimensional animation. Walt had Waffle Rogers and other studio technicians take the bird apart to see how it worked. Then work was started to come up with a prototype figure. Charles Christodoro, a sculptor, modeled some human heads, utilizing actor Buddy Ebsen and staff members around the studio as models, and experiments were made with cams, hydraulics, and other methods of enabling the figures to move realistically. One early concept was for a figure of Confucius, who would interact with guests in a Chinese restaurant at Disneyland. The Chinese restaurant was never built, so the technicians turned instead to the nation's 16th president, Abraham Lincoln. When Robert Moses, in charge of the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair, saw the figure being tested at the Disney studio, he knew that he had to have it for the fair. Walt agreed to speed up development of Lincoln, and the state of Illinois came forward to act as sponsor. The exhibit opened in April 1964 to great acclaim. But audio animatronics had actually been used in a show that had opened at Disneyland the previous year. Less sophisticated figures of birds, flowers, and tiki gods populated the Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room. From then on, audio animatronics would be an accepted part of many of the attractions at the Disney parks. An even more interesting story comes from Walt himself in the Desert Sun newspaper on May 13, 1963, before the attraction at Disneyland debuted. Here's what Walt had to say. "I always want to try something that's never been done before. When our government began the missile program, it built exactly the kind of equipment I needed for this audio animatronic display. As a matter of fact," he confided, "the same machine we use to trigger our mechanism is used in the program of the Polaris missile. If the government hadn't done all the research, it would have cost us a fortune to develop the system." So, Cold War missile technology was the catalyst to bring you the entertaining bears, cars, dinosaurs, Olafs, and Ursulas. But let's get back to the birds. Obviously, the Enchanted Tiki Room at Disneyland was a success, seeing as the attraction has been a mainstay at Walt Disney World since 1971. The show you see today is a tribute to the original Disneyland presentation Walt created, though it has been enhanced with a state-of-the-art show control system, remastered audio, and a more versatile and energy-efficient lighting system. As the lights dim, four colorful macaws quickly spring to life and begin the show. Over the next 10 minutes, the cast of over 225 choreographed audio animatronic performers sing and entertain with a South Seas Polynesian flair. Before or after the show, take a gander at the bird perches. Just below the birds, off to the right, if you're facing the birds head-on, you may find a classic hidden Mickey. When we visit Disney's Animal Kingdom in a few chapters, you will really be able to appreciate and see how far this technology has come, as Disney's most advanced animatronics is the focal point of an attraction in Pandora. Sure, the whole missile story and tie-in to animatronics is a cool part of history, but I would be less than honest if I didn't tell you part of my motivation to come over to the Tiki Room was for something else, a little thing called Dole Whip, which is a delicious treat with a cult following. Check out tiki.dole.com. It's pretty entertaining. Go ahead, leave the Tiki Room, walk next door to Aloha Isle, and treat yourself to a Dole Whip. You've done a lot of walking today, and you deserve one. So, with Dole Whip in hand, keep walking past the magic carpets of Aladdin, and follow the walkway past the Swiss Family Treehouse. And I'm sad to say, our trip through Adventureland is just about over. As you wander out of Adventureland, feel free to branch off to the pathway on the right and walk across the bridge leading to the Crystal Palace rather than go directly to the hub. As you pass the Crystal Palace, you'll also pass the park's first aid station and then Casey's Corner. If you're coming from the entrance of the park and walking up Main Street, note the red and white umbrellas in front of Casey's Corner, which are a great landmark to find first aid. You can head down Main Street, USA, and take in the sights again. Or, if you prefer to avoid the hustle and bustle of the street, you can enter Casey's Corner and walk through the stores that link together for the full block. You will exit into Town Square and can proceed out of the park. Before you board any attraction, check the signs for warnings regarding heart, back, blood pressure, and neck issues, along with risks to riding while pregnant. The following descriptions and blurbs come from the Walt Disney World Resort website. Tomorrowland. Astro Orbiter. Pilot your very own spaceship high in the sky above Tomorrowland amid a gleaming constellation of orbiting planets. Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin. Fire lasers to defeat Zurg in this shooting gallery game that puts you in the center of a thrilling space battle. Monsters Incorporated Laugh Floor. Participate in the giggliest, most guffaw-friendly live comedy show ever, starring Monsters, Inc. and Company. Space Mountain. Blast off on a rip-roaring rocket through the darkest reaches of outer space on this roller coaster-type ride in the dark. Tomorrowland Speedway. Put the pedal to the metal in your very own hot rod and cruise along a scenic miniature motorway. Tomorrowland Transit Authority People Mover. Embark on a 10-minute tour of Tomorrowland aboard this emission-free mass transit system of the future. Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. Travel through the 20th century to see how technology has improved our way of life during this classic 21-minute audio animatronic show. Fantasyland. The Barnstormer. Take flight above Storybook Circus with Goofy and his homemade stunt airplanes for a thrilling junior roller coaster ride. Casey Jr. Splash and Soak Station. Set the kids loose for fun under the sun at this whimsical water play area inspired by the circus train from Walt Disney's Dumbo. Dumbo the Flying Elephant. Soar high in the sky on a whimsical flight over Storybook Circus aboard Dumbo the Flying Elephant. It's a small world. Embark on a whimsical boat ride past a jubilant confection of singing children from around the globe. Mad Tea Party. Spin round and round in a giant pastel teacup during a madcap music-filled adventure. The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. Travel through 100-acre wood in an oversized honey pot and immerse yourself in the stories of Winnie the Pooh. Mickey's PhilharMagic. Get swept away in the magic of Disney animation in this 3D movie musical starring many favorite Disney characters. Peter Pan's Flight. Fly over London with Peter Pan aboard a magical pirate ship to Neverland. Prince Charming Regal Carousel. Spin around, up, and down to joyous music atop a regal steed at this classic attraction inspired by Disney's Cinderella. Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Race through the diamond mine from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs on a swaying family coaster. Under the Sea, Journey of the Little Mermaid. Descend below the waves without ever getting wet for a whimsical musical adventure awash with scenes from the animated classic. Liberty Square. Haunted Mansion. Embark on a spine-tingling tour through an eerie haunted estate, home to ghosts, ghouls, and supernatural surprises. The Hall of Presidents. Behold all of the men who have served as U.S. President in an audio animatronic show tracing the history of the United States. Liberty Square Riverboat. Cruise the scenic rivers of America aboard the Liberty Bell and take a gander at life in the U.S. over a century ago. Frontierland. Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Race through a haunted gold mining town aboard a rollicking runaway mine train. Country Bear Jamboree. Have a knee-slapping good time at this jolly country and western show starring a hilarious bunch of singing bears. Frontierland Shootin' Arcade. Test your gunnin' skills at this rootin', tootin', Wild West shooting gallery. Splash Mountain. Take off on a rollicking log flume ride featuring characters and songs from the classic Disney film Song of the South. Tom Sawyer Island. Brave an adventure all your own at this rustic, secret hideaway inspired by the stories of Mark Twain. Adventureland. Jungle Cruise. Set sail for high adventure on a scenic boat tour of the most exotic and exciting rivers across Asia, Africa, and South America. The Magic Carpets of Aladdin. Fly high over Agrabah on a magic carpet around a giant genie lamp. Pirates of the Caribbean. Set sail on a swashbuckling voyage to a long-forgotten time and place when pirates and privateers ruled the seas. Swiss Family Treehouse. Explore the ultimate treehouse and behold breathtaking views in this attraction inspired by the classic Disney film. Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room. Tropical birds, tiki gods, and colorful flowers come to life in a swinging 10-minute South Seas musical celebration. Magic Kingdom Food and Drink. Main Street, USA. Casey's Corner. American, quick service. The Crystal Palace. American, table service, buffet. Main Street Bakery. American Bakery, quick service. Plaza Ice Cream Parlor. American, quick service. The Plaza Restaurant. American, table service. Tony's Town Square Restaurant. Italian, American, table service. Tomorrowland. Anti-Gravity's Galactic Goodies. American Cuisine, quick service. Cool Ship. American, quick service. Cosmic Rays Starlight Cafe. American, quick service. The Lunching Pad. American, quick service. Tomorrowland Terrace Restaurant. American, quick service. Fantasyland. Be Our Guest Restaurant. American and French cuisine. Table service and quick service. Cheshire Cafe. American, quick service. Cinderella's Royal Table. American, table service, fine signature dining. The Friar's Nook. American, quick service. Gaston's Tavern. American, quick service. Pinocchio Village House. American, quick service. Prince Eric's Village Market. American, quick service. Storybook Treats. American, quick service. Liberty Square. Columbia Harbor House. American, quick service. The Diamond Horseshoe. American, table service. Liberty Tree Tavern. American, table service. Sleepy Hollow. American, quick service. Frontierland. Golden Oak Outpost. American, quick service. Pecos Bill Tall Tale Inn and Cafe. Mexican, quick service. Westward Ho. American, quick service. Adventureland. Aloha Isle. American cuisine, quick service. Jungle Navigation Company Limited, Skipper Canteen. Multiple cuisines, table service. Sunshine Tree Terrace. American, quick service. Tortuga Tavern. American, quick service. Entertainment. Meet a few characters. Be sure to check the times for the meetings once you're in the park or via the My Disney Experience app. Meet Alice in Wonderland at the Mad Tea Party, Fantasyland. Meet an out-of-this-world friend in Tomorrowland, Buzz Lightyear in Tomorrowland. Meet Ariel at her grotto, Fantasyland. Meet characters from Aladdin, Adventureland. Meet Cinderella and Elena at Princess Fairy Tale Hall, Fantasyland. Meet daring Disney pals as circus stars at Pete's Silly Sideshow. Meet Disney friends in Town Square, Main Street, USA. Meet Gaston near his tavern, Fantasyland. Meet magnifique Disney friends as circus stars at Pete's Silly Sideshow, Fantasyland. Meet Merida at Fairytale Garden, Fantasyland. Meet Mickey Mouse at Town Square Theater, Main Street, USA. Meet Peter Pan, Fantasyland. Meet Rapunzel and Tiana at Princess Fairytale Hall, Fantasyland. Meet Tigger and friends near The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, Fantasyland. Meet Tinkerbell at Town Square Theater, Main Street, USA. Parades and fireworks. Be sure to check the times guide at the Magic Kingdom Park for the schedule and showtimes. Disney Festival of Fantasy Parade. Celebrate the spirit of Disney as the Magic Kingdom Park comes alive with music and dance during a tribute to the Tales of Fantasyland. 12 minutes. Electrical Water Pageant. Great sea creatures and twinkling flags cross the lagoon to electronic tunes in this playful nighttime water parade. The pageant starts at 9 p.m. and makes its way around the lagoon. Recommended viewing locations: Disney's Polynesian Village Resort, Disney's Grand Floridian Resort and Spa, Disney's Wilderness Lodge, Disney's Contemporary Resort, and right outside of Magic Kingdom Park. Let the magic begin. Join the opening ceremonies each morning with Mickey and the gang as they welcome you to the most magical place on earth. Main Street Philharmonic at Main Street, USA. Hear this legendary marching band playing tunes from classic Disney films mixed with ragtime and swing. 20 minutes. Mickey's Royal Friendship Fair. See Mickey and his merrymakers perform alongside other popular Disney pals during this magical musical extravaganza. Move it, shake it, dance and play it street party. Celebrate with your Disney and Pixar pals at this delightful street jubilee that gets you moving and grooving. Once upon a time, delight in a spellbinding nighttime show that brings Cinderella Castle to life with projections of beloved Disney scenes and characters. Happily Ever After. Experience a grand finale to your Disney day with the newest and most spectacular fireworks showcase in Magic Kingdom history. This 18-minute show features more lasers, lights, and projections than any other fireworks spectacular in the history of Magic Kingdom Park. Throughout Happily Ever After, you'll witness the many transformations of Cinderella Castle as it becomes a part of popular Disney stories. It all comes together in a dazzling way for a fantastical finale to your day at Magic Kingdom Park. Chapter 2. Epcot. We have always tried to be guided by the basic idea that in the discovery of knowledge, there is great entertainment, as conversely, in all good entertainment, there is always some grain of wisdom, humanity, or enlightenment to be gained. Walt Disney. You've just walked out of the Magic Kingdom and back into reality, so to speak. When you pass through the exit, head to the right and make your way to the monorail station. Take a quick ride on the highway in the sky to the Ticket and Transportation Center. You're going to switch monorail lines and head over to Epcot. As the monorail pulls out of the Ticket and Transportation Center and heads toward Epcot, running parallel with the highway, World Drive, try to look to the left. You should be able to sneak a peek at the Lake Buena Vista Stallport or Walt Disney World Airport. For a brief time after WDW opened in 1971, Disney operated a stallport, short takeoff and landing, and small planes were actually able to land at the 2,000-foot landing strip. Shawnee Airlines was one of two airlines operating at the stallport. As one of their advertisements stated, you could fly from McCoy Jetport, which is now MCO, Orlando International Airport, directly into WDW for just $7. When you deplane, you're only 3 minutes to the Magic Kingdom. Flying directly into WDW was short-lived, and by December 1971, Executive Airlines ceased their operations into Walt Disney World. Shawnee Airlines met the same fate by December 1972. Planes are cool, but some may argue monorails are even cooler. Before you pull into Epcot, here are a few interesting tidbits about the Walt Disney World Resort monorail. The system, in operation since 1971, was expanded in 1982 with a 4-mile extension to Epcot. Each of the 6-car trains, identified by a unique color stripe, is 203 feet long and has an overall height of 10 feet 5.5 inches. The monorail travels on a 26-inch-wide concrete beam supported by tapered concrete columns approximately 110 feet apart. The beams and columns are constructed in sets of 6 and post-tensioned together to form a single 600-foot structure. As trains move along the beamway, they pick up electrical power from a metallic bus bar. In total, the Walt Disney World monorail system consists of 14.7 miles of elevated beamway that services stations between Epcot, Magic Kingdom, and 3 resorts. Disney's Contemporary Resort, Disney's Grand Floridian Resort, and Disney's Polynesian Village Resort. On a typical day, more than 150,000 guests use monorail transportation, with nearly 7,000 guests per direction, per hour, riding along the highway in the sky. By now, the monorail should have completed its loop through Future World, and you're ready to enter the park, which makes this a good time to talk a bit about what you're about to experience. As mentioned earlier in the book, Epcot was supposed to be Walt's community of the future, an all-encompassing revolutionary city where folks will live, work, and play. If you think back to your time on the Tomorrowland Transit Authority's People Mover, you saw the ambitious model of Progress City, Walt's dream. As we know, this dream never came to fruition. It can be fascinating to think about what could have been. But this isn't a road we are going down. Instead, let's try to appreciate what is here today, a 305-acre park that debuted on October 1, 1982. In theory, this theme park is inspired by Walt's philosophies and passions. The two regions of the park seek to celebrate innovation, human achievement, and cutting-edge technology, in addition to an appreciation for Mother Earth and her culturally diverse inhabitants. These celebrations of our world are split between Future World at the main entrance of the park and the World Showcase. The two distinct areas of Epcot are separated by the 40-acre World Showcase Lagoon. Let's start the walk in and make our way to Future World and the iconic centerpiece of the park, Spaceship Earth. As you walk toward that big golf ball-looking thing, you can't miss noticing the 30 granite megaliths adorned with plaques in front of it. This area is called the Leave a Legacy Plaza. The Leave a Legacy program was launched during Epcot's Millennium Celebration in the fall of 1999. The program offered guests the opportunity to leave a little piece of themselves at one of their favorite places. The park had photo capture stations that took digital images, which were then etched onto steel tiles. The program was discontinued in June 2007, and today more than 550,000 tiles are found in the Leave a Legacy Plaza. There are lots of faces immortalized here, and a few famous ones to boot. Check out the F granite megalith in the first row to the right and see if you can find Justin Timberlake and his fellow boy banders from NSYNC. Leaving pop culture behind us, it's time to take a journey and explore the history of communications inside Spaceship Earth. At 180 feet tall, the geodesic sphere was inspired by the geodesic domes created by architect R. Buckminster Fuller during the 1940s. Fuller was never able to achieve a geodesic sphere as large as the one seen at Epcot, but he did leave an indelible mark on the park. Fuller was the one to coin the term Spaceship Earth, which came from this quote during the 1960s. I've often heard people say, I wonder what it would feel like to be on board a spaceship. And the answer is very simple. What does it feel like? That's all we have ever experienced. We are all astronauts on a little spaceship called Earth. So, how did Disney's iconic geodesic sphere come to be? Legendary Imagineer John Hench explains in his book, Designing Disney. At our first design meeting, the engineers showed a drawing that pictured a dome sitting directly on the ground. We needed a sphere, however. I asked if the dome could instead rest on a round platform with legs underneath to hold it up, which would allow us to suspend the bottom quarter of a sphere from the underside of the platform, completing the sphere. After several days, the engineers concluded that, yes, my idea would work, but that it would be expensive. The geosphere we built was 164 feet in diameter, standing 18 feet off the ground on three sets of double legs, buried from 120 to 180 feet deep, with more than 2 million cubic feet of interior space. It, so far, has withstood winds of up to 200 miles an hour. It wasn't complicated at all, really. I was simply able to visualize how the self-supporting dome could be built as a perfect sphere, seeming to float on its legs. As John explained in an interview with the Orlando Sentinel on October 24, 1982, the columns of a spaceship Earth are constructed to reach out like beckoning arms. I defy anyone who is depressed to still be depressed when they walk through here, Hench says. Nothing is happenstance, and Hench knows the reason behind each detail. All in all, the sphere weighs in at 16 million pounds and actually consists of two spheres. The inner sphere has a thick, protective rubber membrane, and over top of the membrane is the outer sphere, made up of 11,324 aluminum alloy panels. The sphere has a sophisticated gutter system to collect rainwater and send it back to the World Showcase Lagoon. Let's hop aboard the spaceship and watch as audio animatronics show us the evolution of communication from the Stone Age to the Computer Age. One of the first things you may notice is the narrator's voice. It's Academy Award winner Dame Judi Dench guiding us through this 16-minute history lesson, which was created by renowned author Ray Bradbury. Many of the original scenes written by Bradbury from the 1980s are still true to his vision today. As you travel back in time, the transitions between time and place are smooth and seamless, and there are plenty of hidden Mickeys and other tidbits to observe during your voyage. I'll point out a few for you. Also, don't forget to see if you can spot John from the Carousel of Progress. The second scene you will see, the first with audio animatronics, begins when you enter the cave. There is a man speaking, with antlers on his head and cave paintings behind him. On the 35th anniversary of the opening of Epcot, on October 1st, 2017, Disney revealed what the caveman is saying and the English translation. Mahri Mutir, Bal Skitom, Madosti Ilgar, Ulk, Imbalo, Erksma Erkims, Erkwindal Felagis, Omande Hido Ilagis, Mirkfrir Ilgar. Fir Madosti Ulk Omfiro, Esto Ilste Orombo Kail Madosti, Umbade Madosti Umbade, Umbade Ahi Rekendoral. Many moon times ago, in the bleak sky time, just before dawn, a great mastodon came to this valley. He destroyed the trees, the bushes, and the small animals with his wild strength. We all ran away from him in terror. Then we made a great fire. We surrounded him with our torches of fire. And then the mastodon became afraid, and he ran from us. Then, in our valley, we were no longer afraid. The next notable scene has more to do with smell than sight. As you approach the scene portraying the fall of Rome, the scent of burning wood is very prominent. Great use of the smellitizer here. Just after this scene, where Jewish and Islamic scholars are seated on the floor, look at the second bookshelf from the bottom. You should see a hidden Mickey in the form of three scrolls stacked together. As you progress through the ride, keep an eye out for the scene featuring a radio studio. The man in the booth is talking into a microphone with the letters WDI, which happen to be the initials for Walt Disney Imagineering. After this scene, the attraction takes you into a typical family's living room during the moon landing. Check to the left of the television. It appears there's an album from The Wizard of Oz. As an interesting side note, in the October 17, 1933 issue of the Hollywood trade paper Variety, there is a quick blurb about a little film about to go into production with a Disney influence. Favorable public reaction to Disney's color cartoon, The Silly Symphonies, has prompted Sam Goldwyn to plan production of Wizard of Oz in Technicolor. When you exit Spaceship Earth, you're about to enter the heart of Future World. Unfortunately, today, perhaps the most futuristic thing about Future World is when the monorail whips through, or the fact that since 1971, the total miles logged by the Walt Disney World monorail trains would equal more than 30 round trips to the moon. Today, Epcot is in the midst of a bit of a reorganization and re-theming over the next few years. When the park opened in 1982, it was considered more of an adult or sophisticated park. Mickey Mouse and crew weren't roaming the park to greet guests, and Disney planned it this way. Imagineer Raleigh Crump, whose creative fingerprints are all over Disney theme parks, recounts a story in his book, It's Kind of a Cute Story. We realized there wasn't much there for young kids to do. Scott Hennessy came up with this pavilion called Eptot, which would have been for little kids. We made a model of our idea to show to management. Each section of the model represented a little kid version of all the pavilions located in Epcot. There was one for the living seas, one for the land, and so on. It was basically a mini play area based on all the big pavilions. We thought it would be a great little addition, but Marty Sklar and John Hench shot us down. They thought Epcot was strictly for adults and not for children. There you have it. Epcot Center. In December 1993, the center was dropped from the name and it became just Epcot. Was all about adults, the future of science and technology. There were exhibits and pavilions about energy, which featured solar panels on the roof that helped to operate the ride cars, health, transportation, and future technology. In the early 1980s, many visitors to Epcot Center had their first interactions with not only computers, but two-way video conferencing. Think yesterday's version of FaceTime. And touchscreen computers. Things we interact frequently in our daily lives today, but were cutting edge and very much futuristic for the time. The remnants of yesterday's Epcot are still visible throughout the park until Disney reimagines it. In July 2017, Disney vowed that major changes were coming to Epcot. I hesitate to list and detail the planned projects, as many times Disney changes the concept and plans for the park. So sit tight. Change is on the horizon. For now, let's enjoy what Future World has to offer, starting with a talking trash can. Leaving Spaceship Earth, continue walking past Innoventions and stop at the Electric Umbrella, where you can grab a burger, a flatbread, or for you vegetarians out there, a very tasty veggie non-witch. Raleigh Crump came up with the name for the restaurant and explained how this name came to be. I also did the design for the Electric Umbrella restaurant too. It was originally called Stargate Restaurant, but that entire area was going through a redesign in the mid-1990s. The name came about one day in a meeting when some guy asked if we would be interested in electric umbrellas to sell in Epcot. They literally were electric umbrellas because they had some lights on the top of them. Well, the design of them stunk, but I absolutely loved the name and thought it would be a great title for the new restaurant. In fact, when we pitched the idea to Michael Eisner, he liked the name so much that he wanted to name the whole damn building the Electric Umbrella. Obviously, that idea got squashed, and it turned out to be called Innoventions. Okay, so you won't find an actual electric umbrella at the Electric Umbrella, but what you will find is an electric trash can, one that talks to you. Walt Disney World takes its trash very seriously. Throughout the parks, you'll find a trash can just about every 30 feet or so. Many of the cans are themed to fit into their locale within the parks. Look for the entertaining trash can near the restrooms at the Electric Umbrella. It's a bit of a trash talker. Up next is Future World East, featuring Mission Space and Test Track. Heading over to Mission Space, your go for launch. Disney partnered with NASA to create this very realistic, some will say very intense, trip into space. If you're an adventurous, thrill-seeking person, this is an amazing must-see and must-fast-pass ride. As you're queuing for the attraction, check out the Simulation Lab, which houses a 35-foot-tall gravity wheel similar to what NASA uses to simulate gravity in deep space. Disney's involvement with the gravity wheel on display here at Mission Space transcends theme park entertainment. Beginning in 1955, the Disneyland television program aired three shows discussing the realistic possibility of space travel: Man in Space, Man in the Moon, and Mars and Beyond. These programs, while containing animation and humor, were very much scientific and factual, and they were an overwhelming success. Disney collaborated with Dr. Wernher von Braun, both on screen and off, to develop this anthology. As his official NASA biography states, Wernher was one of the most important rocket developers and champions of space exploration in the 20th century. During the episodes Man in the Moon and Mars and Beyond, von Braun illustrated and explained the possibilities for using a gravity wheel concept in space. His concept happened to be 250 feet wide, would move at 3 revolutions per minute, and would provide artificial gravity in space. Many folks from government and within the aeronautical community acknowledge that Disney's involvement in promoting the notion of space travel during the 1950s helped the space and rocketry program gain momentum and come to fruition. Mission Space has two flavors, so to speak: green, Earth mission, and orange, Mars mission. The orange mission uses centrifuge technology, similar to what NASA uses to simulate the physical experiences astronauts would encounter during spaceflight. A trip on orange spins and tilts to simulate the speed and G-forces of a spacecraft launch and re-entry. A trip here provides you with a slingshot around the moon and then a tough landing on Mars. Disney even reached out to NASA to replicate what a landing on the Martian planet would look and feel like. When creating the ride, more than 650 Imagineers spent over 350,000 hours, the equivalent of roughly 40 years, to develop the attraction. New for fall 2017 is a revised trip aboard Green. This experience is less intense and provides a realistic orbit around the Earth, where you can see the Hawaiian Islands and the Northern Lights. These views are realistic and authentic, as they were captured by astronauts and cosmonauts during their stay on the International Space Station, which is also viewed during this ride. The Green experience doesn't use a centrifuge and opts for a simulated space flight via a motion simulator. If you're a bit claustrophobic, you may not be a big fan of either orange or green, as the compartments you ride in are a bit cramped. Fans of the show Firefly may recognize Gina Torres as your mission guide. As you leave the attraction, notice the patterned asteroid concrete. There's even a hidden Mickey or two hiding in the pattern. Now that you're back on Earth, get ready to reach peak land speeds of nearly 65 miles per hour as you whip around Test Track, presented by Chevrolet. General Motors has had a presence within Epcot since opening day, when the company sponsored the now extinct attraction World of Motion, which Test Track replaced. As you approach the attraction, you'll notice the building is circular, resembling a wheel. Inside, you will find a world of automotive design, as you're able to create your own virtual concept car, and then board a Simcar ride vehicle to race through a thrilling series of performance tests during your journey. This ride is unique, interactive, and very fast, along with being extremely high-tech, as described in the Imagineering Field Guide to Epcot. The technology employed in Test Track rivals that of any theme park attraction ever produced. Each car carries on board more than enough processing power to run the space shuttle. It's a very complex effort to manage each car through its paces at vastly varying speeds, including a complete stop, all the while maintaining the proper intervals between vehicles. Each vehicle is equipped with onboard audio-visual systems. This vehicle, combined with many complicated special effects and show elements, made Test Track one of WDI's most challenging achievements. The chassis of each vehicle is made entirely of composite materials, meaning there is no steel between the front and rear wheels. Each vehicle carries 3 onboard computers and generates 250 horsepower of power. It's time to slow things down a bit and head over to Future World West. As you leave Test Track and walk toward the center of Future World, make a stop at the large fountains. On October 24th, 1982, the International Ceremony of the Waters and dedication of the Fountain of Nations at Epcot took place here. Cultural representatives, selected by their countries, traveled to Epcot, each with a container of water from his or her nation, and poured it into the fountain during the dedication. 25 bodies of water, representing 29 nations, were poured into the fountain. The Senegambia River in Africa represented 8 African nations, and the mighty Mississippi River represented the United States in the ceremony. Today, the fountain features 200 pneumatic shooters that can shoot water 150 feet into the air. If all the shooters were fired at once, there would be 2,000 gallons of water in the air. However, there would still be 147,000 gallons still in the fountain. Did you know that each year, over 75 million Coca-Colas are consumed at Walt Disney World? I know what you're thinking. Wait, we were just talking about a fountain. What does this random fact have to do with the Fountain of Nations? Well, nothing, really, except that across from the fountain is Club Cool, sponsored by Coca-Cola. Pop in for a free sample of the exotic sodas Coke serves up around the world. Go ahead and give the Italian soda called Beverly a try. Note the banners hanging from the outside of the building. There's a hidden Mickey or two on them. After Club Cool, we're going to visit the seas with Nemo and friends, and then wander around the Land Pavilion. Last but not least, before we visit the countries of the World Showcase, we will spend some time with Figment at Journey into Imagination. If you emptied the body of water from the pavilion of the Seas with Nemo and Friends into 1 gallon milk containers and laid them side by side, they would stretch for 540 miles. At 5.7 million gallons, this pavilion is home to one of the largest man-made ocean environments in the world. When the $90 million pavilion debuted in 1986, it was the world's largest aquarium. To celebrate the grand opening of the pavilion, Mickey Mouse put on scuba gear, as did Frank Wells, who was at the time president of Walt Disney Productions. Both man and mouse jumped into the aquarium and performed an underwater ribbon-cutting ceremony for Epcot's newest pavilion. While it isn't the world's largest aquarium today, it is still home to over 3,000 creatures across 200 different species. Rays, sharks, turtles, fish, and coral can all be found at the Seas with Nemo and Friends, along with a few really smart dolphins. Since the early 1990s, researchers working at the Seas have been conducting cognitive research with the dolphins on site. The March 1992 issue of Popular Science goes into detail about a giant dolphin typewriter, roughly the size of a minivan, which was developed at Epcot. Bottlenose dolphins would poke their snouts into the keyboard in an effort to communicate with their trainers. The research program into dolphin communication and cognition is still going strong at Epcot. If you're interested, head over to Google and search for the article Cognitive Research with Dolphins, Tursiops truncatus, at Disney's The Seas, a program for enrichment, science, education, and conservation from the International Journal of Comparative Psychology. It provides an excellent overview of the research being conducted. But it's not all science and research at the pavilion. You can go talk to a turtle at Turtle Talk with Crush, or board a clam mobile and go under the sea to try to track down Nemo from the Pixar movie Finding Nemo. Don't worry, you won't get wet, as this ride is on land. You're technically looking for Nemo on land, as the only water you're experiencing is through the visual effects. However, the pavilion adjacent to the Seas with Nemo and friends is the Land Pavilion, which takes you on a boat ride on actual water. I think Disney may have confused the modes of transportation for these two rides. The Land Pavilion has much more to offer than merely a boat ride. It's dedicated to telling the story of our interaction with Earth, with a strong emphasis on agriculture, which is seen throughout the boat ride. Living with the land. Here are a few interesting tidbits and things to look out for should you take the 14-minute boat ride. The attraction offers a great perspective and appreciation for how our food is grown. Throughout the four greenhouses, witness how chocolate, coffee, vanilla, tomatoes, and rice, many of the common things we eat every day, are cultivated. What the pavilion really demonstrates well are the non-traditional techniques on display, such as the nutrient film technique and hydroponics. Both occur without the use of soil to grow plants. These techniques can yield some pretty impressive fruits and vegetables, such as a 9-pound lemon and a one-of-a-kind tomato tree, which has produced 32,000 tomatoes from a single vine. These tomatoes, along with the more than 30 tons of fruit and vegetables grown at the Land Pavilion, are served in Walt Disney World restaurants. When you board your boat, look at the colorful mural on the wall. There are a few hidden Mickeys throughout. As you cruise along through the scenes of the attraction, note the number on the mailbox of the farmhouse. It's 82, the year Epcot opened. If you notice above the house, you can see the Garden Grill. This restaurant offers a unique dining experience as it rotates ever so slightly, affording you great views of the rainforest, farmhouse, and prairie scenes of living with land. If you do have a meal at the Garden Grill, when the farmhouse comes around, you get to check out the second floor and the fully furnished bedroom of the home, which you're unable to see during the boat ride. A little side note. Breakfast is a great meal to have here. It's an all-you-can-eat character breakfast featuring Chip and Dale, and if you get an early reservation, it's a great opportunity to hop on Soarin' with little to no wait if you're able to finish breakfast just as Soarin' opens. Much like the Seas with Nemo and friends, the Land Pavilion is also conducting its fair share of research. Depending on the day and time of your trip on Living with the Land, you may just see Disney scientists working in the lab. These aren't audio animatronics or folks working with props. These are real scientists doing actual work. The lab first opened to public view in 1988, as covered by the Orlando Sentinel on October 8th of that year. It's a real laboratory, but also an exhibit to stimulate interest among young people, maybe even stimulate some scientific vocations, Ling said. Visitors can view the 500-square-foot lab at the end of a boat ride through the Land Pavilion, where the story of agriculture is told through animation and exhibits of various crops. Plants such as pineapples, strawberries, bananas, and peanuts, developed through tissue culture propagation in the laboratory, are used to replenish the living exhibits, as well as provide some of the fresh fruit and produce for the attraction's restaurants, Epcot officials said. The lab has been in operation since the attraction opened in 1982, but only now is being opened for public viewing. The laboratory is a joint effort of Disney, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and Kraft Incorporated, corporate sponsor of The Land. Our major goal is to communicate the excitement of agriculture and the fact that it is high technology, said Henry Robitaille, manager of The Land and director of biotechnology research.